Okay, so going on to the next session, double checking, everything seems to work. So I don't need to introduce myself, I'm also going to be vulnerable, but I think we've got a couple of cases, so observe, we recap. I'm Yuka Bayan, it's a British name, it's actually John's name, it's just like Yuka Lava. I'm with a company called Avanaut. We're a system integrator that helps actually get complex technology and put them into production use, not just the technical build part, but also very much the organizational and process change part. And what I'm talking about today is, some people hate the term metadata, some people love the term metadata, but, our learners and our proposition around metadata, how do you figure the actual use case story? I'll be talking about a couple of stories with different customers, some names I can quote, some others I cannot quote, about metadata use cases. And then, typical pushback, why a lot of companies are saying you can't do it. We see the value, but we can do this because of X, Y, and Z. What am I usually hearing? And how I would get over them. And then talking a little bit about the creation, curation, sharing process that we're just kind of touching on. And then a little bit of call to action or sort of next steps. And if you have questions, put your hand up. I would love to run through the material, but we can also make this very interactive. And, without trying to be completely prescriptive about what's metadata, the one thing I've really learned about metadata is it means different things to different people. It's a very siloed thing. Most companies today are looking at metadata very differently if I talk to people from production or pre-production versus if I talk to somebody from distribution. And reality, we're partially looking at the same stuff, we're partially looking at different things. And also, a very typical number that I'm hearing a lot of times is somewhere between that process, the same piece of data, so let's say the formal title or description or task participation list, gets created and recreated somewhere between 20 to 40 times. So part of the process is just a simple efficiency and optimization process. Some of this is how to better reuse the data and enable people to do their jobs better. We can talk about the details of what's actually metadata. We can talk about that later. I would imagine everybody in the room already has some kind of an idea of what they would call metadata. And then the big point really is about the silos and how different people look at it from different perspectives. So everybody that I talk with agrees that metadata is really important and it's something we all need. And I think it's actually proven by the fact that every company does recreate it multiple times over, whether it's in their spreadsheets or their Excel files or their Word files or something else. And it's used for a number of different things, and it can be used for different parts of the process for different things. So in the production side, or like from the ideation from pre-prod to post-prod, we're usually looking at how to control the process. Part of it is just the daily stuff, like where am I filming, what's happening, who should be on the site. Part of it's things that have implications later. So going back to the new regions story, going back to the revenue and other things that we were helping them with, part of that has implications way later in the process. So for example, one of their use cases was the residuals payment part. And right now, in the past, they're paying, and I know this from a couple of other studios, a lot of the studios have the same thing. When you have an actor or a guild coming to you after the movie's been released, maybe it's already been on the market for coming and saying, I didn't get my residuals check. What really happens is some people, usually exes, or in the worst case, I would say lawyers, start watching the movie with stopwatches on their hands, figuring out how many minutes or how many seconds a specific person was on a scene in order to pay them the right residuals and figure out if the claim was valid or not. That's pretty expensive when you start thinking about it, and that's all data that we had at some point in the beginning of the process. We knew at some point who was in which part, who was on which day, and how the actual final versions of the movies were put together. Another very interesting thing coming out of that, and I don't think anybody's really done this yet, but when you start thinking about the types of contracts either people or your product placement props have, and a lot of times are thresholds. Maybe you pay them a totally many of numbers, $10 a second for anything under 1 minute, but if they go over that 1 minute, then you maybe not have to pay them 20 or 30 or 40 bucks a minute. And when you're putting together more, nobody has more copy on that. So when you're putting together, for example, the airline release version, or the domestic TV distribution version, if you're close to those thresholds, and you can actually know that at the time of the cutting, maybe there is a way that you can cut the movie just a little bit differently, taking or leaving a couple of seconds here or there to make it a little bit more financially effective. That's another creative way, an interesting way of using the metadata. Of course, on the flip side, on the distribution and marketing side, people need to know what the movie is about, people need to know who's going to be able to see, and there's a lot of discussion on the recommendation engine, whether it's Netflix or Amazon or Crackle or whoever talks about, you know, how can we actually recommend you things that you like better, which is a huge deal. And making sure that data is as accurate and as available as possible is of course providing revenue. Also, another thing, and this is another studio, and I'll mention their name. I'll be talking about it in a little while, but you know, because I need to replace the series with another studio series. I'm going to use Breaking Bad and Sony as an example. They are not the studio behind this. But what they want to do is they want to take their back catalog of highly popular shows. They want to be able to tag different scenes with people, objects, and whatnot. So when you, for example, if you're a TV channel doing reruns of their shows, you can easily go and find specific scenes with, for example, Thanksgiving turkey, where a person in the movie, you know, let's say Walter White is holding a gun on a desert, if that fits your theme. Today, what happens, you know, TV channels run these shows or bus and ads all the time. But what happens is somebody either remembers the whole series, or they go and watch hours and hours and hours of the episodes to find the clips they want. And that's another way of getting your content out there just a little bit faster, just a little bit more efficient, to be able to actually tag on that scene level metadata and giving out to the actual users or distributors. And actually the final point, almost forgot that. This is also from New Agency example. You know, when you're shooting, I don't care if it's a movie or TV show or whatever, there's always going to be a lot of different scenes or cuts that didn't make it to the final edit. And you know, especially when it's not about the people, when it's not about the scene, it's in particular, but when it's one of those, you know, feature setting scenes like, you know, here's this the skyline over New York Central Park, I'm panning back and forth. If you have five different versions of that, you use one of them in your product, why couldn't you sell the four others? And if you have proper metadata on where they are, what's happening, what's the weather like, you know, whatever the parameters may be, that's another way of capitalizing just a fraction more from the footage or the material that's already have. And of course, for another company, Fiverr, if we're using that, that's a way of not having to incur that same cost of, yet again, in New York City. So, like I said, as far as I'm hearing, everybody likes this idea, everybody wants to do it. And I think we all know, you know, companies have started, Anthony was talking about some of the things ABC Studios have started on, but it's pretty minor here and there. And typical questions of why, you know, what am I hearing? So sometimes at the NSEC level, we have a little bit of this perception, you know, we don't need it, we're all creative, this is all about the entertainment value. Reality, we all need it, we all use it. Go to IMDb, ask a bunch of metadata about your products out there. Go and ask your marketing department. They're already using and reusing it. So that's really not a bad argument. Another one that I hear frequently is it costs more work. It changes the way I work. It costs more work. It makes me do something more. And this is usually about the siloed approach and the sub-optimization within our organization. Typically, the argument goes a little bit deeper into saying, you know, let's say I own the production set. I'm there. And if my job is to now start entering the cast list and the people and the props and the objects and whatever in a specific formatting tool that is not part of my daily job, it doesn't really help me. It makes me do more work, and somebody else gets the benefit.
Yeah,
you know, that's, you can argue that's partially valid, but at the same time, that goes back to the organizational cultural leaders of figuring out how to make this happen. Because if you are there, you're probably entering something else that was created earlier in the process. Maybe the names of the scenes or the names of the characters. You have to enter them into your system. If we can help you build the integrated platform that gets the data both into your solution and out of your process, it probably is beneficial. And a lot of times that gets married away, or married with an argument about reluctance to give information away. This is about the more old-fashioned way of information is power, I want power, hence I'm not giving information away. It's mine, it's here. If somebody else needs it, you know, they better come and get it. And I think the world at large is changing a lot in that space. So that's sort of the way I would say people in their 50s and above seem to think more frequently. Whereas people younger than us, or at least younger than I, millennials, they actually are more adept to sharing. And it's a very cultural thing. Like, do I feel comfortable putting my information out there? And another argument that usually goes with that is, if I do provide this information to others, are they going to come back to me? Are they going to ask me about some details? Or are they going to criticize me about the accuracy of the information? How do I make sure the information is accurate? And, you know, we all make mistakes. That's a reality. It's a cultural issue of helping people get over it. One big complaint is there's no master data source. And I think we heard some reference to that in Anthony's talk. Like, creating a complete taxonomy for everything within a movie or TV series production that would map all the different parts. Yeah, right, but it's nearly an impossible task, and it would be crazy. And by the time we were finished with that, the technology or our thinking about the movies would have changed anyway. The real thing there is, except that there is no one master. There are different parts within the process that will feed different parts of the information. Things will change, and the real key becomes, you know, how do we build flexibility into making sure that we can work even when things are not mastered and in a perfect way, like somebody in the 80s would have modeled that into a database. Sometimes we still hear technically hard to share. Different platforms and programs don't have the APIs available. I think that's changing. I haven't really heard that in a couple of years so much. So usually platforms are more adept to sharing. Typically the biggest problem on the hard to share part is it's an Excel file, so it's an unstructured format, and that becomes much more of a cultural conversation. How do we get them away from the Excel files or the emails than actual technical discussion? And the last one, I've really heard this couple of times, if there are legal or compliance risks about sharing this data. And this goes back to the example of new agency. Like if I have, for example, all my contracts about moving one place, you know, what's the likelihood that a, let's say, production assistant or somebody else goes, looks at them, and leaks information about some big star salary or things that they should have been, or their health information or something crazy. And that goes back into how do we actually build this into a secure platform. At the same time, reality is those same pieces of information are shared over email today. So it's not like we're really safe from this problem, it's just that it's more out there distributed and it doesn't feel as much of a problem, but it is the same problem we're having today. So I understand where the data is today and you actually already have the problem, and how can we actually help control this problem a bit more? So creation of data, and you know, how do we actually combine this data? There are a lot of different ways. And you know, I try to bring this into a little bit of maturity for talking about the different ways you can get there. But at the lower left-hand side here, there's the manual, and I intentionally put in the recapture, which is where most companies are today. Like, I type it in again, and it happens all over again. And it kind of rolls from that, you know, from the traditional paper forms into a lot of different Excel files that are essentially just the paper forms recreated. The next step really is technical recapture, technical capture, which is more looking at the, not so much about the marketing or distribution of data, it's much more the original production and like getting technical data from the camera, and you know, cameras are starting to put in not just the resolutions and all the movie things, but also locations, GPS coordinates and whatnot. You can start getting some of that. I don't think that's gonna be the real answer. A couple of things that will help is number one, automatic capture or AI, artificial intelligence capture. And this is where things are starting to happen. I actually have a separate slide of that next. You can get a lot of the data, not all of it, automatically by computers. Now, that's going to change the way you treat the data. But the last one where things will actually start coming together is that, I call it an operational metadata, how you can call it by a whole bunch of different names. But the point is, you start storing all the data in a central place that will both get the data, but also push it out to the different systems or processes in a secure way, and that way things get recreated less. And I'm not going to say you'll ever get completely rid of recreations, but at least things will get a little bit better. So talking about the automatic metadata creation, and once again, I'm picking on Solvit. This is not actually Solvit's example, so that's breaking that into that, if somebody didn't recognize it by now. But what's already out there today, and I'm seeing a lot of the studios playing with this and dabbling into this, is feeding the whole TV episode, movie, whatever you have, through AI. And what AI can do today, this is actual, these are actual examples from what Azure can do. Different platforms have different capabilities. IBM will give you a long talk about what they can do. There are a couple of open source platforms. But if you can kind of, you know, find faces, what's better, if they are celebrities, we can actually recognize the name of that person automatically. If it's a known cast, you can teach the system to recognize the people by their faces. You can map them, you know, characters, actors. A lot of the system, that this may not be such a big use case for this industry, but the systems can actually also figure, you know, this person, although I have no clue who he is, I have a rough idea of their gender, age, emotion, and we can figure out what's actually happening. And that's starting to build some of the contextual things on the scene. Some of the other things that actually do come automatically out is location information. So indoors, outdoors, in a specific place, you know, in a city. Object recognition. So depending on the platform you're using, they can automatically recognize dozens or hundreds of different types of objects. So there's a baseball bat or a Christmas tree or a turkey on the scene. There's speech and text, which actually listens to the text, transcribes that as speech, and then you can analyze that using linguistic processing too. And you know, Anthony here from ABC was talking about how you cannot completely automatically create, for example, a synopsis. I'm totally working, but you can still pull a whole bunch of keywords. Then in this particular scene, they were talking about confession, they were in a car wash, you know. We know that they are indoors in a car wash, and from the context of the script, we know that that's very likely an Albert Perkin where the whole series is happening and so forth. So actually using these technologies, you can already pull a lot of information together. And there are a couple of use cases. One, of course, is when you're creating new content, marrying that together with the data that you're getting, but also for the existing content backlog that we all have. How do you go and transcribe all of that? Maybe you have thousands or probably even more hours of existing content that you want to get out there and make it more accessible, and you can do a whole bunch of things with the automatic creation. Another interesting aspect, and this is something we're actually getting at the end of the last session, is I don't think there's one value, at least not called for all the attributes. So for example, the title probably changes for the project multiple times. The final title maybe is something you actually started with something else. Description is probably even worse. It's gonna have multiple different end values, not just the localized language versions. You may actually have different versions based on your distribution channel, whether it's on Netflix or Amazon or on DVD, or depending on the subject, geographics or whatever. There's a lot of things. Some of these are actually out there fit, some of them are not yet, but you will have a lot of different versions of the same attribute or tag. And this is something that I would be able to use in the system, absolutely. The other part of that is you also want to control or at least have an idea where the information came from, because that may have an impact on where you can use it. So for example, if you're pulling additional data, for example, from IMDb or Wikipedia or Nielsen or whatever, that's stuff that you probably cannot push out your door. Whereas things that you created, you can push out the door. So having the source information of where the data came from is critical as part of the curation process. And then, you know, first, going back to your question at the end of the last session, this is what I'm saying. You know, there is no one curation process or stewarding process that ends up with one authorized value that you have at the end. There will be multiple values. You start from some baseline, and hopefully you don't completely recreate everything, but at least you will have a full traceability of where things came from and then where they went. And now, of course, you know, having that traceability also of what actually happened, who created which version, who created it, then this is a big deal. And then one thing I don't think that I have on the slide is that security information. Who should have access, which role should have access to this piece of information?
So what do you call that, metadata?
this is when we get into the funny semantics. Yeah, we can play with the terms. So about sharing metadata, and this goes back to the cultural conversation. This is much more about culture than processes or technology. We have all these different potential users, whether it's in marketing or distribution, production, finance, archiving, unions, external users, that have the need or the use for the metadata. In reality, they can either get it from you, they will recreate it, it's either one or multiple versions of the truth. It's happening anyway. And different companies are at different points in terms of the sort of readiness or maturity of sharing. So, and I'm not saying one or the other is better. This is about how you want to operate as a business. And then reality is not black and white. There's always shades of gray in between. But you know, if you're not sharing, things will be recreated over and over again. Things will get multiple versions of the truth. Your marketing may not even agree with your original production on a bunch of parameters. You will be, in the non-sharing version, you will be creating the content over and over again, or the data over and over again, whereas instead of sharing it, which has a financial implication. And that's the one thing I've always wanted to do, sit down with somebody and try to put a financial number next to that. And nobody's been willing to entertain me that far yet. I would love to get there. I don't think we'll ever get to a perfect number, but that may be eye-opening, especially when you start thinking about the 9 times the data gets created and the amount of reconciliation you have to do for the data after it's created when you realize different versions.
Yeah, I mean, that's my problem. In network television, right, you have the production cost, which really doesn't affect me, but it's the licensing cost. Then how do we increase the profitability of the TV show? So it's ratings, it's ad dollars, it's the out-of-pocket cost, it's all the other streams of revenue. The issue is you have many pieces of data out there, but they're not interconnected. Something, I think we talked about this earlier, something could be the blacklist or blacklist. So if you have, you might get something from Nielsen, you might get, you know, our salespeople. The other mix is now you have to add it into the scale because the time it plays also affects the ratings and the dollars. So you have all these moving pieces to figure that out. That's the challenge in putting it into a financial sort of model.
Yeah, and no argument there. Nobody's saying this is a trivial thing. But that's, I think you're touching on a lot of different things. And also, what I was trying to say with the example about the different costs, if you had more data when you were making those decisions, it maybe, you know, I'm inclined to say there probably is a way of taking advantage of that data, figuring out where, for example, a particular show should be scheduled, or if there are pieces of licensed content that if we were able to cut a couple of seconds out of a particular scene and fill it from another scene. I'm not saying override the creatives, but I'm saying inform the creatives, let them know if, you know, you can have this, but if you're doing this, is there a way of saving, I don't know, $5,000 on this particular instance, or whatever the number may be. So the data uses, and that's a small thing, there's about $2,000, and I probably lost that much just coming in here this morning. But the point is, those start adding up when you have multiple episodes over time, and that's just one example. When you have a lot of those happening at the same time, small streams do add up. So I think that's an excellent point. So sort of the final slide or closing slide, I'm calling call to action, that may be a little bit too much to talk about. But reality, like I already alluded to, this is not just a technology problem. Granted, technology and data are at the core of this, and what we need some technologists to solve this. But it's also a problem. How do we, you know, how much does this change our process? And especially when we start talking about all the different companies that are involved in a production. But at the end, the most, at least for me, this is a people and cultural problem. And how can we change our culture? How can we foster a new and different culture? How can we embrace the fact that the world at large is going more into this network economy or platform economy where it's more natural for people to share things? How can we jump into that and embrace it instead of trying to resist it? And in order to have a successful, and you know, I don't think anybody's going to solve the whole big idea of what I'm trying to propose here. Nobody's going to solve that in the next couple of years. But if you can get that going in parts of the process or parts of the organization or for some of the content types, I think there's a lot of benefits to be realized. But in order to get them, you will need to address all the different powers. So with that, any other questions or comments?
So you had one slide that the breaking bad slide.
Yep.
It had emotion suspicion. That was through machine learning?
So, all right, to be very frank, this slide is a made-up slide. But machine learning, what it can do, it does recognize, I think the current version might do, I think it recognizes 7 base emotions.
Anger, fear.
Yeah. So, and things are getting better. So, I don't know if it doesn't recognize confusion and suspicion yet. I remember the terms by heart. But it's also, they are also upgrading the platform right now on a monthly basis. So it will get better. And also, when you marry, if you want to do really fancy data science stuff, you can marry those 7 days together with the information from the spreadsheet. You are actually getting a lot closer to the actual emotion, right? That is the actual intent.
That's scary.
It's scary, but it's also exciting, isn't it? Depending on which
one. Yeah.
Yeah. Anything else? Stops us from making that more automatic and automatically exposing parts of this to the public, but I don't think anybody's quite there yet. So that sort of final control of what actually goes out there, everybody still wants to retain that. And to the question about the contracts, actually in one case study that we have been working on, which is the new agency case study or case, we were storing the contract information, not just the contract as documents or PDFs, but in a parsed format that are also machine readable. We were storing them and using them, because we did getting important information from them on, for example, residual payment, credit and schedules. So you can get there, and now, I'm not a legal expert, so I probably shouldn't give you legal advice that you should have to or should not have related words there. All right, I think we're coming to the end of the time. So,